ideas, inspiration, innovation. This is The Game Changer.
Good afternoon. This is Chickie Fitzgerald.
And now here's your host,
Chickie Fitzgerald. We have a very interesting topic before, and I'm trying to think back over the last 10 years if we've ever talked about merger and acquisitions, and I don't think we have. So welcome to our show today. I am interviewing author Jennifer Fondrevet, and we're going to be talking about her book, Now What? And this is a survivor's guide for thriving through mergers and acquisitions. And I have a sinking feeling that we're going to be seeing a lot more mergers and acquisitions in the coming days. So Jennifer, I think you've got a very, very timely book here. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Jennifer, I love to share with our listeners about your backstory. So if you can just frame it, and what might they not see on your LinkedIn profile?
Well, first, thank you for bringing attention to mergers and acquisitions. I'm not surprised you haven't had a guest on talking about it in the past. It's right. It's not your typical coffee conversation. I am a former, I'll say, recovering chief marketing officer. I was at several large Fortune 500 companies, and in that time, I experienced three separate multi-billion dollar acquisitions. And every time I experienced one, I kept thinking to myself, there has just got to be a better way to do this. I saw teams ripped apart, people laid off, and then they'd try to bring them back on again, strategies that would shift and change. And these were companies that I really felt that had there been a greater attention to the people challenges, what people go through, how change is difficult, if there'd been a focus on that earlier in the process, that there would have been a greater chance for success. And so in 2016, I had gone through my third one, and I just, at that point, I thought, okay, I'm tired of saying there's got to be a better way. I've got to show what a better way looks like through M&A. And I started to write my book, Now What? And at the time, I was just thinking of writing a survivor's handbook. I had so many people, particularly when I went through my second and third one, say, you really should write a book, because I, with each experience, I got better about here's what's going to happen. Here's how this is going to play out. This is what you need to expect, the stages of grief that people will go through, the personalities that emerge. And I thought if I could bring transparency to that experience, that more people would have a better chance of not just surviving, but thriving through it. So that's what led me to writing the book and to what I do today.
Well, and it's so funny because I have actually been through M&A as well, but in a very, very different context. You were with three different multi-billion dollar companies that went through mergers. And I went through two different merger discussions with the same company, with two companies that failed in the merger process.
Oh, wow.
So we went all the way through with the first one. I was with what was then American Airlines Sabre, and we were trying to merge with a company in Europe known as Amadeus, which is now the largest global distribution system company in the world. And at the time, they were in their infancy. I mean, it's really strange to look back at it now, because we were merging with a company who hadn't really even had a very successful launch yet. I mean, it was quite amazing. But we got all the way through to printing both companies' names on ball caps, right? Okay. And passing those out. And and then in the 11th hour, having it fail.
Wow.
And the second time around, I had moved over and was working for WorldSpan, which at the time was owned by Delta Northwest and TWA. And then while I was with them, we were trying to merge with Amadeus and also Abacus, which was the Asian counterpart of both companies. And we got all the way through to creating the technology to allow a travel agent to pull up a record in any one of the three systems and share it amongst the three systems, which normally that work isn't done until long after a merger. And we got that done, tested, ready to go. And the merger fell through over who was going to own the island of Montserrat, right? Which spoke French, and Amadeus was a French company, French owned and operated company, but it was in our hemisphere, right? And so again, the deal fell apart at the 11th hour. And then the funny thing is, I then moved on the other side of the equation, working for the private equity companies that ended up buying and merging some of mm-hmm. the same companies. Yeah. So anyway, I feel your pain, and you know, think that they're probably in the next book, there's a chapter about what happens when they fall apart, right? And
oh, yeah. You
find yourself all psyched up to do it, and then it doesn't work.
And it's interesting. You bring up a good point, and it's the reason why I felt, okay, I really should write a book, because I was on both sides. I was both at a company, and we were acquired. Nokia acquired Navtech, which was a digital mapping company back mm-hmm. in 2005. And then I was on the other side in the subsequent, my second and third one. So in it gives you unique perspective. And frankly, the reason why I was better in the second acquisition is because I knew exactly how the people who were reporting to me felt. I had been there. I had been acquired. So it's interesting to hear you say you went on the other side. And I think that, you know, in writing the Survivor's Handbook, which is satirical, by the way, I do want to highlight that for anyone who's interested in reading it. It's got caricatures and some, what I would like to say, amusing cartoons, because there's a lot of dark humor in M&A, and I do try and bring both perspectives to right. what's happening to you.
Well, and the funny thing is, and we're going to talk a little bit about the market forces that drive M&A and why there's so much focus on the things that are the money related items, right? The you know, taking advantage of economies of scale, et cetera. And I was just on a Facebook group the other day with the group that ended up being the resulting merger of a couple of these companies that I had been working with. It's called Travelport. And they were talking about, why is it that all three systems from the companies that had been acquired were still operating 20 years later, right? And it's like, that wasn't the plan, mm-hmm. right? So let's talk about some of those market forces, because I think we're right in the middle of another period where there's going to be a lot of catalysts toward further consolidation in our country simply because of what's going on with the virus.
Well, and I experienced this. These were the forces certainly that drove the acquisitions I was part of. Technology transformation has been a huge piece of it. You have so many companies in every industry where they're struggling to survive. They can't keep up with the pace of change that's happening as a result of technology, yet they might have an expertise in a niche that a larger company can benefit from. So you're seeing technology and global scale, right? The ability for a company to survive by just serving one marketplace. Those days are gone. And, you know, even small mid-market businesses, this is what I find fascinating. A lot of people assume that M&A is purely for large, multinational, multi-billion dollar corporations, but it's not. The middle market, you know, from 10 million to a billion, has had probably the greatest amount of M&A activity in the last 5-10 years. So all of those market forces, and it comes down to survival. How can a company survive in a period of time where, given technology, consumer tastes changing so quickly, it's hard to keep up. And so companies are finding that either coming together or acquiring others are the best way to grow.
Right, right. And what we've seen in my industry, because we've had an enormous amount of M&A in the travel industry, both on travel tech and certainly we've seen it in hospitality companies like Marriott and Hilton, you know, who've gone out and acquired other brands. So, you know, the acquiring a customer base, right, is frequently a very interesting thing. And whether that's geographic or, you know, just a different sector that you want to go into. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know because you were on both sides, you know this to be true, that only those people who are selected to be on kind of the inner circle typically have visibility into what's going on. And in fact, in many cases are forbidden to say anything.
Yes.
So what are the signs that M&A might actually be something that's going to happen for your company? How, if you're not part of that inner circle, are there things that you can be looking for?
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because the very first section of my book talks exactly about these things, right? What are the drivers for it? What are the signs? And I try and be judicious about whether you're at a big company or a smaller company, here are signs you can expect. And right. What's funny, for the book, I interviewed about 60 executives from all vantage points, HR, middle managers, CEOs, CFOs. And what was always funny to me is the people who you would consider your frontline leaders would consistently say, listen, if you start seeing a lot of blue suits in conference rooms and your boss is often not available, but you don't know what that block on his or her calendar is for, but they seem to be gone a lot. And what's fascinating to me is that was the most consistent sign that something was up. You know, the other ones were particularly in your mid-market companies, right? If you're missing revenue numbers, if you are consistently under forecast and not growing at a rate, right? Your competition has come out with a new product and suddenly your clients are not as willing to do business with you. All of those are signs. You can't remain in a bubble that something is not going to happen. You've got to be smart and looking for those signs. Don't wait for someone to tell you. You have to be smart about the business, not just your own business, but the industry you're in and what it takes to survive and do well in it. And that's one of the things that even middle managers would say to me, that made them smarter for the second time where they went to another company, is always right. Be aware of what's happening in your industry. You can't just stay so focused on the product you're selling and your customer relationship. You've got to be smart about what they're looking for and what's happening in with your competition and in the marketplace. Those are the signs you've got to clearly be always on the lookout for.
Right. And you talk about how to be prepared, right? So that you don't personally fail and that the company doesn't fail as a part of the process. But then you lead directly in to the stages of grief, which I find fascinating.
Yeah.
Because I was never an internal part of a merger that succeeded. I was part of in fact, in every single role I had, I was involved in, you know, spending the assets of a company out. And then in my consulting years, I helped with a lot of M&A activity. But you go through the five stages: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And is there any way to speed those up? Or is it just like normal grief in real life, that it's just something that time has to pass?
Yeah. I'd like to say there's a way to speed it up. What the advice that I give to people in those chapters, and you highlighted, right? I try, and in this, the whole premise of the book is to help you not just survive, but thrive. And the thing I highlight at the beginning is know your value in any situation. So just a moment ago, we talked about what are the signs. When you're watching what's happening in the industry and what's happening with the competition, know what your skill sets are, your transferable skill sets. That can help you navigate right. All of this. And with the stages of grief, there's not necessarily a time frame that I put forth, but what I say is, whether you like it or not, you've got to get to acceptance. And acceptance doesn't mean you have to accept that what has happened. You may be still very angry about it, but you have to accept that it has happened. It's not going to go back to the way it was. That is, would love to hear your perspective on this. Even if the deal falls through, you don't go back to the way things were, because you experienced through even trying to make that merger acquisition happen, you realize you've got gaps in your business or that there are things you need to be doing, and you tried to make that happen. Then typically the focus when something falls through is, okay, well, how are we going to still do what we were trying to do with this one?
Right. Well, or worse, you've now opened your kimono.
Yep.
Right. And quite often these are competitors.
Yes.
And that certainly was our case. Now, we were a much stronger company when I was at Sabre. We were the number one in the world. And while Amadeus would eventually become that, they weren't at that place at that point. But, mm-hmm. you know, you always ask yourself how much of what they learned about how we did things, our business model, our technology, how much of that influenced, you know,
right.
what they ultimately did. And I remember another one, and it was when I was working with Travelport. They had just acquired a small company that did, I want to say expense reporting, but the guy who had run that, it was a very small company out in Seattle, they then went and acquired Orbitz. And there was a piece of what Orbitz did for corporate travel that they competed with. And they called him and said, we want you to come and we want you to lead this. And he said, you know, didn't ask for it, don't want it. And then I was brought in as a consultant to try to help them come to a single culture. And I had even forgot about that, of actually being responsible for helping them to come out on the other side as one company with one vision, one product line.
Yeah.
You know, I do.
And that's, you raise exactly what I was saying. Like, one of the faults that typically happens is senior leadership will say, don't worry, nothing has changed. You know, we're going through this process and everything is, the moment you even entertain having the conversation, even if it doesn't go through, things have changed.
Yes.
And you just, that's the point that I make repeatedly in those stages of grief. You have to accept that change has happened.
Right.
And you, it's not a linear path. You can right. get all the way to a certain stage and then stumble back. But the premise that I lay out, and as I said, it's a humorous book, so I've got a Spotify playlist for each stage of grief that you go through. Because I equate it to the worst breakup you've ever had, right? You loved this company. Let's assume you did.
Oh,
you know, so
yeah.
Think about it like a relationship. When it's a bad breakup, what typically helps you get through it? You play songs, music that, you know, makes you, you know, feels cathartic in the moment. So for each stage of grief, you know, I have a song, a 5 or 6 songs for each of those. And the last one that always gets a good laugh from people is I have That's Life by Frank Sinatra.
Well, you know, I was just thinking, boy, I didn't realize how many mergers and acquisitions I was involved in, but there's a company and my industry, probably much like the telecoms industry, was very characterized also by involvement of the Department of Justice, right? And so you've got a company who ends up, the announcements are made that they're being acquired, and then Justice gets involved. And all of a sudden, a year later, it hasn't yeah. happened yet. So yeah. maybe you made it through the grief, and now you don't know whether it's going to break up or not, right? So I think that there are all kinds of timing issues, but I think that the songs, that is just priceless. You ought to get Spotify to create a new channel for that. That would be
brilliant. Well, it's on there. If you go on Spotify, it's called From Denial to Acceptance.
Oh, that
in the book you can
funny.
Find the playlist.
That is so funny. So let's talk about this cast of characters that you created. And obviously this is the amalgamation of real individuals that you encountered.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to read through some of them. You don't have to go through all of them, but maybe you can just pick out some of your favorites. The former rock star, the great unifier, the know-it-all, the know-nothing, the black widow, the missing in action, the specialist, the opportunist, the ostrich, and the dominatrix. So why don't you just pick out your favorite stories?
Well, and it's interesting, when I was interviewing the executives for the book, I would show them the caricatures. So there's 10 caricatures in the book for each personality. And I didn't even have to give them a description. And at the beginning, I didn't even give them a name, but they would always say, oh, I know one of those, right? The know-it-all in particular. And you know, more than once, somebody would say, oh, I've dealt with a know-it-all even before I had a merger and acquisition. And I said, yeah, actually a lot of these personalities that emerge in a merger and acquisition exist before that. What can happen though is it can really undermine the success of the deal, because so we'll take a know-it-all, for instance. When you've got a know-it-all in the mix, it can kill collaboration. We had that a lot in my first acquisition, where it got to a point where I remember we just said to the company that acquired us, well, if you know everything, why'd you acquire us, right? It seems like it was a waste of your time if you know everything.
Right.
And so that persona in particular can really kill the potential for success, because you're feeling as though, okay, well, my knowledge clearly isn't worthwhile because we keep getting told, well, they know it. And it's one of the issues of M&A is arrogance tends to be the predominant driver, and it can just kill discussion. One of my favorites, and it usually, particularly with the CFOs and the CEOs, the former rock star. So that can be the person who had the Midas touch in your original company. Could have been your head of product, your head of sales, your head of marketing, any one of those people who just, they had the ear of the CEO, they could do no wrong. What can happen in an M&A scenario is the metrics for success change. And they're still going with the old tune, the old metrics, and they have a very difficult time adapting and pivoting. And so they become a former rock star because they're still convinced that the old success metrics are the right ones. And they're trying to convince people, you know, this is a waste of time, it's going to fail, when everyone else is moving in that direction. And that caricature in particular is rough, because you can often, and this happened a lot in the interviews, people would say, I could see it happening to this person. And I talk in the chapter about how to help them, but over time, it's got to be them. They have to pivot. They have to recognize that new metrics, they have to reprove themselves. And that can be really tough.
Right, right. So I'm curious about the Black Widow.
Yeah, most people enjoy that one. And I would say I experienced a Black Widow in the first acquisition experience I went through. So this is, if anyone knows anything about the Black Widow spider, right? She is known as the spider who essentially kills her mate and moves on to the next one. In a business scenario, I chose the Black Widow as a descriptor because it's that person who poses as an ally, someone who you think is on your side. And so you might share a lot of information. They could be somebody who you worked with already in your company, or could be someone from the other side. They pose as an ally, and you realize over time that they're just trying to take information from you that makes you expendable. And you don't realize that. And you might even, and I highlight this in a couple of the stories in the chapter, people may even say to you, I'd watch out for so-and-so. He or she, I don't necessarily think they have your best interest at heart. And you might typically say, oh, no. We go way back. We've been working on projects for years. And then you slowly realize, and one of the stories I share is, suddenly meetings that you were both going to, only he or she is going to. And you find out that they've presented themselves as someone who knows the information that you already have. So why include her or him? Right. And so it becomes one of those, it's one of the tougher personalities, because it's someone you really thought you could count on, and you realize over time that they're not actually working on your behalf.
Hmm. Well, I know we could spend hours going through all of these, but you know, I think those who are listening to this may be already in one of those stages of grief, or they may be seeing the writing on the wall again, particularly since we're recording this at a time when we are just hopefully about to come out of lockdown from this virus, and companies are going to be hurting. They have already cut people out of the company, hopefully thinking that it's going to be temporary. But since things are still moving rather slowly on the SBA money getting out, there are going to be a lot of mid-sized companies that don't make it, right? And that the only way to make it is to be acquired by the major player in their industry. So now what?
You know, it's the name of the
now
book.
What? Yeah. Because we know that it's important to go into it with the right mindset and to be collaborative with the other side, but that is hard depending on what stage of grief you're in, right? And how much you're listening to your music, right? But you talk in this section of the book about finding your niche. And that isn't something that I think that you can just wait until it happens. You really do need to do that self-assessment that you talked about earlier of really understanding where you fit and being prepared by realizing that your current role isn't the be-all and end-all, even for you, even if there weren't an acquisition, that growth requires moving on. And sometimes I know in my own career, I was constantly moving into positions that I absolutely was not the best person for. I was very, very blessed in my corporate life to just keep, I was a college dropout. I had one semester of college behind me and I was up against all of these MBAs. And, you know, I remember sitting at a table and you and I may have talked about this the first time we spoke. I would sit there and think, how the hell did I get here? Yeah. And that fraud syndrome, right? Which I know a lot of people who do have a seat at the table in M&A quite often think about that. It's like, what if they find out that I don't know everything, right?
Yeah.
So finding your niche, how is the best way to do that? Because you know you're also having to do with the politics that are going on and the jockeying for position.
Well, and the underlying, I'd say, manifesto of the book, because it really is targeted at middle managers. The people who I like to describe aren't in the room when the deal is made, but who are burdened with the execution. It's your frontline leaders. And what I say in every way possible is you have to know your value always. And we've talked a little bit about that throughout this discussion. And one of the stories that I think really nicely captures that, and it was related to the specialist personality. One of the executives I interviewed said he had a number of specialists on his team who were petrified about what was going to happen because they didn't know if that department was going to be valuable anymore. Mm-hmm. And he said, focus less on your title and the area you are in, but what your skills are. Demonstrate your ability to get smart quickly on anything. That's look to fine tune and showcase your transferable skills, because that's what's going to make the biggest difference for you as people try and figure out who goes where, what are the right teams to have, where are the right people to have on it. And that really is the theme and what I focus on, particularly at the end of the book, right? Where I've talked to you about the stages of grief. I've revealed the personalities you're going to deal with. Now, how do you make this work for you? And the big point of that is you've got to know your skills, do that self-assessment, and do this whether or not you think you're in a company that's going to go through a merger and acquisition or not. You should always be clear on what your skills are, where you want to learn and grow and how, and what you can always contribute to any company. Right. And that's really, you know, the end part of the book focuses on all the ways that you can think about and do that.
So the very last chapter of the book is about thriving. And of course, I'm the eternal optimist, so I always love a book that ends on a high note of talking about what does thriving look like in M&A? And I think you've given us certainly the pieces and parts, but if there was one thing that you could say to the people at the top or the money men who are driving it, because I can tell you in the rooms that I sat in, it was the Solomon Smith Barneys and you know, all of the suits from all of the different Bain and McKinsey, and you know, it can sometimes be overwhelming the amount of advice that a company is getting, right? But what is the thing that, you know, if you had each one of those to do all over again, and you had the ear of the person who could make it different or better, what is the piece of advice that you would give to them to thrive?
So I look at it two ways, to your point, right? There's that the leadership, executive, M&A, deal maker group. And frankly, this comes from having interviewed a number of CEOs and private equity guys and gals in particular. They said the greatest lesson learned was having humility, having more humility and respect for the other side. Arrogance tends to be the driver just because everyone thinks they're the smartest person in the room and they're pulling this together and they're going to make it happen. But what the lesson learned was, had they had more humility and respect for what each side brought to the union and the partnership, there would have been a greater chance for success in many instances. And so that's, I would say, as an observer, I was happy and relieved to hear that. Now, whether or not we start to see that play out more, right. You know, it's a tough lesson learned because, you know, confidence tends to be the driving energy in most of those discussions. And then for the middle manager who is in the middle of this M&A and on his or her journey, what I say is the grass is always going to look greener. Right? The temptation to just jump and go and get out is strong. And I recognize that having been through three of them. But I remind the reader, you've built, likely, ideally, you've built equity with this company. And really look for the opportunity. The opportunities are there because you're right in the middle, typically, of a strategy being changed and shifted. And if you've got a skill set that really is valuable to the future vision, look for opportunities for you to bring that skill set forward and contribute to it. I say to people, particularly at all different levels, now there are more opportunities than you might have ever imagined. And oftentimes it's hard to see that because you're going through stages of grief. But the more you look for that, the greater opportunity you might see. And if after that, after that assessment, both your self-assessment and an assessment of where the company is going, if then the company doesn't align with your values or you really feel that the learning that you've done will be better found somewhere else, then I say, you know, absolutely. Look for, move on. Don't wait for the company to tell you where you're going to go. You need to start making that decision sooner. You should make the decision. Don't wait for someone to make it for you.
Right. Well, Jennifer, this has been really, really fascinating, particularly for me because it has been such a big part of my career. And even in my current role, you know, as a tech CEO of an early stage company, and you and I did have this discussion a few weeks ago, we have to look at, do we just raise money? Do we be patient and wait for revenues to flow, which in this environment is going to be very tough because we built our product for the travel and events industry, you know, two of which have been just really devastated during this time.
Right. Or
do we start looking for strategic partners, right? Strategic investors. And you know, while it's not a full M&A activity, you know, it can have many of these same characteristics. And so I encourage those who are both with big companies and with small companies that your future may be uncertain, that this book could be a really great tool for a lot of different kinds of people. So Jennifer, thank you so, so much for just sharing from your heart with us about something that I know was gut-wrenching when you were going through it. But you obviously came out on the other side and have shared your knowledge with so many people through this book. So what's next for you? And if people want to get in touch with you, what is the best way for them to follow you or to hire you if they want you to come in and help them through an M&A activity?
So best way would be through my website, jenniferjfondrevet.com. You'll see that I do both speaking and consulting. Day One Ready is the name of my company. It's actually, the intent is to help executives recognize that day one isn't the day they announce. Day one is when they first think about a merger and acquisition and how to get smart on the what are called human capital challenges, but I hate it. They're people challenges. So yes. How to be smart about that and prepared for it so that when they do make the announcement, they give their workforce the best chance for success. And then another way absolutely is just via email. I do respond. I did even before the pandemic. Now with more time, I'm better able to, but you can reach me that way at jenniferjfondreve.com. And I don't know if you'll be able to post the book as part of the posting for this, but it's still available on Amazon, and I'm
yes, happy to say absolutely.
It's done very well. So there's a lot of people clearly who are going through M&A or business transformation.
Absolutely. So we have been talking to Jennifer Fondreve, and she is the author of a book called Now What? A Survivor's Guide for Thriving Through Mergers and Acquisitions. And I know everybody's going to be going out and going to your Spotify channel. That's the first thing I'm going to do when we're done. But Jennifer, thank you so, so much. Being a game changer takes a lot of courage. It sometimes does take going through those stages of grief and figuring out what the diamond is on the other side of the black hole. And I know M&A can be a big black hole for a lot of people. So thanks for giving us hope and for being so intensely practical and putting a little bit of humor in this too. I think that is absolutely necessary.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
All right. Terrific. Thank you so much. And we will see you next week.
You've been listening to The Game Changer. Ideas, inspiration, innovation with Chickie Fitzgerald.
Like what you just heard, visit c-suiteradio.com. C-Suite Radio, turning the volume up on business.